Hello, my OT for Life tribe. I'm so excited to have you guys back for another episode today. And just to let you guys in on a little secret, today's episode is a really, really exciting one for me. I bring on Francesca Avalli, who's an occupational therapist who specializes in pediatrics and works within the clinic setting. And Francesca was the first OT that I met, and she is actually the reason that I decided to pursue this wonderful profession of occupational therapy. And I'm so excited to get the chance to bring her on, share her story and the knowledge that she has throughout her years of practice, and just getting the chance to connect with the person who started this all for me is just extremely special. So get ready to have some fun and let's slide on in to the interview.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Oh my gosh, you look very profesh.
Oh, yeah, right? With my nice messy bun. And I literally just got home and just like threw on a sweatshirt. And I was like, all right, we're rolling with it.
Yeah, totally.
You look way more put together.
I just got home and my daughter was screaming in the background. And I was like, please let her go to sleep. So she's good.
Okay. All right. Well, what I kind of wanted to do was start and give a little picture about what your OT life looks like currently.
Oh, this is very interesting that you are asking me this, because currently it is way, 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 way different than it ever used to be. And it's an adjustment for me because I have a 2-year-old. So after having a little one who I really want to spend as much time with as possible, It's been a challenge because currently I have my private practice still in the Miracle Mile area.
And that's in Los Angeles, just because we have listeners from everywhere.
Oh, yeah, totally in Los Angeles. So it's in Los Angeles where I'm literally only in the office on 2 different days out of the week, on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And for me, I'm kind of one of those people who needs to like get in, do as much as I can, get those clients in back to back to back, and then be done. If I have any time that I'm just like sitting around, you know, with a cancellation or a chunk of time, like I don't even have lunch. I just like work straight through, because now it's like my priority is still obviously to help kids and work with kids in the occupational therapy profession. But also it's like I'm a mom. So it always used to be first I was an OT. Now I'm a mom first and an OT second. So I'm in the office 2 days out of the week and I've got kids coming back to back individually. And I start at 12 and I'm done at 6. So that's really specific.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really funny because I say like up until just a couple months ago, I'm probably still the same way. I would just book myself solid. Like, yes. Yeah, when you said like I don't take lunch, I'm like, what is lunch? I don't even know what a lunch break is.
Or even a bathroom break.
Yeah.
Like do I go to the bathroom? Barely. Like maybe within that like sliver of time in between clients. But yeah, it's probably, I don't know. There are people who think I'm crazy, especially after doing it for almost 20 years. And they're just like, how do you do one-on-one clinic still with like 6 or 7 kids back to back? And I'm just like, I don't know. It's for me the way that I need to prioritize my time.
Yeah, that's, I mean, working in the clinic is intense. Mm-hmm. And I did it for a few years, but I never did it like day after day. I might have, because I was working in the schools and I was also doing in-home at that time. And so I might have had like 1 day a week that I was only in the clinic, and then the rest of the days I was there for maybe 3 or 4, something like that. But doing like back to back. I mean, now you're only doing 2 days a week, but I'm sure previously you were doing more than that.
Yeah, I was. So previously, and things also have shifted because my goal with opening up my private practice was always to mentor and teach other OTs. And my practice was much larger before having my daughter. There were times when I had like 5 OTs working for me, and my job was more about evaluating each client that came through the door and then figuring out what therapist was the best fit for that client. And then I maybe only had 3 to 5 clients of my own. But after having my daughter, I realized that I wouldn't be able to mentor new therapists or even therapists that were out of school for a few years that still needed that training in SI. And so I don't have any other therapists aside from one OT that's worked for me for years who knows what she's doing. She only has a few hours and works for me one day when I'm not in the clinic. And she's so independent that we don't even really need to check in with each other that often. So now that's pretty much what I'm doing. And eventually, as my daughter gets older, my goal is to get back in and help teach more of those green therapists just out of school. Because what I feel like the trend is that there's less and less education for these therapists and mentoring once they're out of school.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I feel like it's a tough thing for students and new grads that are like just coming out of school because they have student loans, they have like schooling to pay off. And so I feel like a lot of the places, a lot of the jobs that are going to offer more are going to have less mentorship. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm always trying to tell my students that come with me, it's okay to an extent. Like I don't want new grads to like go for a low payment or anything like low rate, but it's okay to accept a position that might have a little less pay, but have a better mentorship package, because I agree, it's so huge. And I feel like in school, they get really good exposure, but it's limited. And then all of a sudden you're out practicing and it's like, okay, good luck, have fun, here's your caseload. And I've always said, if you can get good mentorship in the first year, the first 2, first 3 years, you'll be able to go anywhere in life.
Mm-hmm.
But exactly. If you don't have that fresh out of school, you're constantly going to be almost treading water, like wondering if what you're doing is okay.
Right. Right. And not having anyone guide you and just sort of learning from mistakes, which we all do, and that's typical and that's normal and that is another form of learning. But it's so invaluable to have somebody look through your goals, look at your reports, watch a treatment session and tell you, this looks good. Maybe you can try this. Or, you know, it's just, I had such an invaluable experience working at Pediatric Therapy Network right after grad school. And I would not change that for the world. I didn't get paid anything, but I, like you're saying, the priority for me was gaining that experience, really setting that knowledge base for myself to feel confident, because confidence is everything in a profession like we're in, because these parents, especially I work with children, everything is privately funded. So these families are expecting someone to work with their child. If they're paying privately, they need someone that knows what they're doing. And they can tell if you don't know what you're doing. And you have to be honest, confident, and know what you're doing with this type of population. And that only came from getting all of that experience that I did get in the beginning. And back then, we were told when working at Pediatric Therapy Network, like, if you do go into the school system, you will get lost. You won't have any kind of direction, and it will be difficult for you to kind of really be as effective as you need to be. So I really took that, and I thought that was really good information, and I hung in there and worked like grueling hours and, you know, learned so much, barely paid my student loans. I mean, I was like paying rock bottom on them, but I just knew that there would be something that would work after all of that. Like, I wasn't going to stay there forever. There are people who have stayed there that are still there. And there's a few. There's not a lot because there's been a lot of changes there as well. But there are still people there that I know that were there when I was there. So there's like lifelongers, but I just knew that I would really learn a lot and it's what I wanted to specialize in. And my ultimate goal always was to eventually work for myself.
So you always knew that. I find that fascinating. And I love talking to other practice owners and other OTs that have started companies to like go back and be like, when did you have this aha moment that you are going to own your own practice? Can you pinpoint one time that you were like, yes, this is happening?
Well, I definitely can, but there's also just some backstory because I'm from a family of entrepreneurs. Like, both sides of my family owned multiple businesses. So I always saw that. It's in my blood. It's something that I always saw. Even though my mom was a stay-at-home mom, I always saw my dad running his own business because it was a family business and he had multiple family businesses. And then my mom's side of the family also, they were farmers and they had their own businesses. And my grandpa was also a mechanic. So like, I always saw people working for themselves. So that's where that came from. But I knew in college, I always knew that I wanted to work with children. And that just was something always in me. I just knew that I've always loved being with kids and I'm always looking for diversity and challenge and change. And I remember thinking I'd be a teacher. And my dad was like, I don't think that you are going to be super fulfilled with that. And so I found out about occupational therapy through a counselor in college. And he was like, I don't know much about it, but I think you might like it. And at the same time, my cousin, who's now in his 20s, was diagnosed with autism. And so I learned more about occupational therapy through going to a few of his occupational therapy sessions. So that's how I found out about OT, but I always knew that I would want to do something on my own. And then when I was in grad school, when I was taking the pediatric course, I was like, I know that I'm always eventually going to have my own practice. So that's when I really knew that I would, but it's always just been something that I knew ultimately because of the way I am and the way I've been brought up.
I love that. And I'm kind of like giggling over here because I'm like, man, I was not that way at all. And like, I never thought that I would actually have my own practice.
Really?
I didn't think I would or that I could until my husband actually made the comment, like, you could go do this yourself. And I was like, no, you're crazy. Like, that's not going to happen. And so I love hearing that you were like, yeah, like, I knew I was going to work for myself. And then when you realized that you wanted to work with kids, it was like, okay, I'm going to do that, but I'm going to work for myself. And then somehow, like, everything just kind of came together and you found occupational therapy. And then it was like, yeah, I'm going to work with kids and I'm going to have my own practice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just an awesome story right there. And
oh, thank you.
I love how you actually shared how you found out about occupational therapy. And I want to just take a moment because this episode is actually a really, really fun episode for me to be doing because you are the reason that I became an occupational therapist. And so
I love it. It's so awesome. Like, just in every sense of the word, like, it's unreal to me. I love it. But yeah, tell me more about that because I remember, well, for my second job after leaving Pediatric Therapy Network, I went to work for a school job, but I found it to be an easy transition because that school, okay, so the school was in Palos Verdes, California, and it was a school called Sunrise, which has gone through so many changes since then, since way back then. But
we're not that old.
No. But it has. Like, they don't even have the same model. Like, everything is different. It really
I'm
is.
Sure.
Yeah, like, the clinic isn't even there anymore. Oh. It's classrooms.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it might be, but it might be downsized. Well, it is downsized, but it might even be more downsized at this point. I don't know. It went through so many transitions. So it has changed quite a bit. Their model was based off of a model that they had learned about in the Santa Barbara School District, okay. which was a, you know, an inclusion model with neurotypical kids in the classrooms with the kids with, you know, multiple different challenges. But the reason why it was a very smooth and easy and comfortable transition for me was because Pediatric Therapy Network designed the clinic for the preschool in this district.
Ah, I did not know that.
Yeah. And they sort of helped navigate it for them and really train whoever it was that was working there. And then when I started, that was because one of the main therapists left. But you were there.
I was at that point. I had just become a behavior therapist. So I was a parent educator for 2 summers during undergrad. And then I had just graduated and I had started as a behavior therapist. And so, yeah, like I was very fresh to being at Sunrise.
Right. Okay. So then you were doing this and then what made you, because you know, you're saying that like OT was sort of brought to your attention because of the work that you did at Sunrise.
Yeah. So I remember this like so vividly. It's crazy. I remember sitting in the classroom one day and at that time I was with one little boy and I was sitting with the teacher and a couple of the aides that were in the classroom, and they had been doing this for years. Like they knew the ins and outs of special education and preschool and everything. Yeah. And they were sitting there and I think everyone was just trying to push me because they saw that I was good with kids. And so I think they were trying to push me to do something else, do something a little bit more within that realm. And at first it was like, oh, you should become a speech therapist. And then like a couple weeks later, one of the aides looked at me and was like, you know, you'd actually make a really good occupational therapist. And that was the first time I had heard that word, the word uh-huh. before. And I remember kind of looking at her and I was like, I don't even know what that is. And then she's like, oh, well, you know, the little one that you're working with, he goes to OT. So why don't you just take him down there the next time he goes? And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm game. That works for me.
Yeah.
And so we walked down to the clinic and I remember opening the door and seeing everything that was in there. I remember there was a ball pit and there was the scooter board and there was so much fun equipment. And like, I remember that my eyes just lit up. I was like, this is amazing. And then the little boy that I was working with, his eyes just completely lit up. He was so excited. And usually he was kind of one that was like, eh, I don't really want to be doing anything.
Yeah.
And then I remember talking with you and you were so passionate about what you were doing and like just everything. I think like the passion just like oozed out of you. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is it. And I literally went home that night. I researched occupational therapy programs and started taking prereqs and started applying and started the next year.
Wait, did you tell me this stuff? When you were doing all of it, were you doing it simultaneously at the school, like at Sunrise or?
What probably, I mean, this was, this was 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I was doing my research, but I was only at Sunrise for that summer. And then when the school year started, I ended up going to a different school. And so I think what ended up happening is that since I wasn't at Sunrise, I didn't get a chance to see you ever again.
Wait, so it was like one time?
It might have been a handful of times, like when I was able to take him to see you, but it wasn't very much.
Wow. And I remember exactly what classroom you were in and all of those people. And like, that was an amazing classroom. And I remember, cause I would also come into the room And I would help sit at that back table. And I remember when you were at the table helping, and I think I was maybe saying, oh, try it this way or try it that way. Like, we would do cutting projects and coloring and things like that. And so I remember that. And I remember you were so sweet and you were quiet, but you were taking it all in.
Oh, yes. I was very shy. I am not afraid to admit that. I was extremely shy growing up. And so it's funny now that I'm doing a podcast, because it's not very typical of me if you would have known me 15 years ago.
right. No, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And I'm just so, because I do remember you weren't around. It was brief, but it makes sense. You moved to a different school. And I remember that too, because I was like, wait, where's Sarah?
I'm gone.
Because stuff, changes like that sometimes. But oh my gosh, I love it. I think that is just unbelievable. And I did, I still do love every bit of working with the kids. And I think after being in private practice for so long and sort of, understanding more of the connection that you make with the families that you might not make so much when you're working for a school district, or even when you're working for yourself, there's a different level of care that comes with that and your clients. It's not that you don't care about them as much when you're working in a school system or when you're working in another clinic or any other setting, but there's a different kind of connection that you make with them. And I mean, I am very professional and I don't cross the boundaries of, like, I'm not hanging out with these families, on the weekends. It's nothing like that. But it's like the time spent with them and the sort of genuineness that comes across, I think, is what sets it apart from any other practice too. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Oh, completely. It makes complete sense to me, because it is. It's really hard to explain what it actually is about it, but I get it. And maybe it has to do with something that, like, because you are working for yourself and you're representing yourself, like, there's nobody else to default to. You don't have a boss to go running to. Or if somebody's complaining, it's not like, oh, just go talk to my supervisor. It's like, no, you talk to me. And so you have to know what you're doing, or at least be able to say, hey, I'm unsure. Let me go look this up and I'll get back to you. Because you have no other safety net. It's like, it's you and that's it.
It's you. And no one teaches you these things. You're managing clients. You're managing people that work for you. If no one teaches you this piece, and you have to learn fast and you have to be open to it. And that's where I think some people get fearful of having their own practice, because that stuff is a whole separate entity than just being an OT. And when you have to deal with parents that are maybe like upset or there's a problem, it's hard, because we're like, oh, well, we're just working with kids. We just want to make kids happy and have fun. But it's, you're dealing with a whole other set of customer service. And parents have, like I was saying earlier, a whole other set of expectations too. Like, their child in their eyes are the only child that you're working with. And you have to stop and address that immediately, or they don't think that you're giving them the kind of care that they are paying for. And you want to do that too, but it's sometimes hard. And that's been a challenge for me too in my current practice, because, like I was saying, I'm a mom first now. And it was a big transition, and it still is for me, to say no. Or, I have parents that are like, why don't you just work more days? And it's been a challenge for me to be unavailable, because before I'd be like, I'll make it work. I mean, I was crazy back then, like, just working grueling hours and always just taking more on, because you know that you can help these kids.
Yes.
And I still know that, but I have to put my family first now.
I love that you have just brought that up, because I feel like it is something that really needs to be talked about, especially once you've been in practice for a couple years. I think when you're getting it set up, everything's new, everything's fun, everything's exciting, and you push through it. But then when you start to kind of sit back, you've been doing it for a while, and you're like, okay, now what? Like, maybe you have a child, or maybe something else changes in your life, or you just kind of get this new perspective of like, where am I going? What do I want out of this? And I think it's really easy to just say yes to everything, because why not? It's your practice. You can do whatever you want with it. If it involves working on the weekends, if it involves waking up early and going seeing clients at 6 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock at night, if you have no other time constraints, no other responsibilities, why not? That's money in your pocket. That's like hours that you can be helping somebody and helping a child or helping a client. And I know that I've gone through it where a couple years ago, it was insane. I was seeing 9 to 10 kids back to back hour sessions plus drive time. And it was crazy. And that's why I'm like, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that's kind of been one thing that I'm working on this year, is like, learning to say no, because it's such a necessary skill, but it's really hard to do when you work for yourself.
It's so hard to do when you work for yourself. And parents, God bless them, and I'm one too, but some of them will suck you dry. Like, they want you all the time. And then you feel that pressure. And you also don't want to say no because they rely on you so much. And it's hard. It's really hard. And then the other thing is, this is what we do for our kids in our sessions. We teach them how to be self-aware, how to regulate, how to calm themselves in situations where they're in the red zone, you know, and they need to get into the green zone. Well, we need to take a dose of what we're teaching them. And I think that we are in our therapeutic sense of self too much, and then we don't apply it to ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And maybe not even when you're working for yourself, but when you are also, you know, bogged down with a caseload of like a gajillion kids working for a school system, you know, that sort of stereotypical OT that has no time for themselves because they're just trying to get all their kids in. Like, it's just too much. And so it's something that I feel like all the time we're teaching our kids, but we also have to like bring it back to us.
Yeah. And I think too, I feel like kind of what you're touching on here is really like that compassion fatigue, because as an occupational therapist, we are caring for others, working with and for others. And I think after a while, it does start to take a toll on you, especially if you're dealing with more difficult situations. And yeah, really realizing the importance of having a balance, having the self-care, and just being able to take care of yourself in the middle of your job and your personal life and all the other roles and responsibilities and shoes that you wear.
Yeah. I mean, I have limited time, as I've already mentioned, after having a 2-year-old, and I should be going to yoga. I used to teach yoga and I used to practice daily, and I barely have time, because if it means getting another client and going to yoga, I still will take another client, because it's still hard for me to put myself first. And I think that that's also a characteristic of most OTs, because we are, like you're saying, givers and caretakers, and we do have to stop and like look at what's happening, especially in a clinic setting where you're also, your body is physically having to endure. I mean, I've been in physical therapy so much because of what we do. Have you ever experienced that? Have you, like, I've like injured myself, like my right side, my right shoulder, pulling those kids on the swings. I mean, I've been in heavy duty physical therapy for this job.
And I'm sure the PT is like, hey, why don't you cut back your work schedule a little bit? Yeah. And you're like, okay, yeah. And then like the next day you add 5 more kids to your caseload.
Exactly. I mean, and you're like drained and you're exhausted and it's just like, oh my gosh. So yeah. And then pile on like a child, you know, on top of that. So it's a lot. And our profession is also wonderful and flexible to still be able to have a family life and make your own hours and stuff. But it's just navigating all of that. And I love it. And I really, there are days when I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm thinking about, okay, what is my schedule like today? Ooh, it's going to be a tough one, you know?
It's a marathon. That's what I say. It's a marathon day today.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, my husband is always like, Francesca, you make a difference in these people's lives. And then I remember that. And I remember how much I've helped them and how much I love them and how much fun I just still have playing with kids. Like I love, that's why I love the clinic piece too. I don't think you can play as much as you can in any other setting. Even when you're at their house, the play is different. Like if you do a home visit, play is a little bit different because it's still kind of controlled by them in a certain way. And I mean, it's still very effective home treatments, but in the clinic, I feel like you have complete, like, you know, obviously it's child directed, but you get to direct it more so in your own space.
Well, I think it's like, if you want to make a mess, if you, like for me, if I want to do painting or shaving cream or anything that's like super messy, like GAC or something like that, mm-hmm. I either have to be very aware and make sure that I bring in a little board and I have like maybe a tablecloth or a blanket laid out or something like that. And I always have to ask permission, like, hey, I think this would be really good for the tactile needs of your son or your daughter. Would that be okay? Or can we do it here? Do you want us to do it outside? Like, there's kind of that added layer that you have to get through.
Right.
But if you're at a clinic, it's like, whatever, just make sure that they have clothes that they can ruin that day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, but like the swings and the slides and all of that stuff, it's just like, I don't know. I'm constantly coming up with new ideas too. And that's the other piece that I love about OT. Like I just still think of new things and get inspired by other things. And it's like a little playground for me.
So I'm curious, what would you say your favorite either like treatment strategy or activity or piece of equipment that you have in your clinic?
My strategy, the first thing that comes to mind is silliness gets them every time. Like making silly sounds, pretending that I'm the idiot and I forgot something, or, oh my gosh, you know, what am I doing? I can't believe. And the other strategy that I think goes a long way for kids is, because I work with kids that are like pretty high functioning, probably almost all of them don't have a diagnosis. They're just, you know, they're all going to like private school. They need some extra support in their sensory processing that impacts their gross motor skills, their social skills, their fine motor, you know, being able to sit during circle time, you know, their regulation, self-regulation. So these kids are very high functioning, and confidence is a big, huge thing for them. And parents will tell me that all the time too. I just want them to be confident. So I feel like my other strategy is reminding them how difficult this is, and it's okay to maybe climb up this ladder and feel comfortable going down the slide. And it's hard, but things are hard for me too. So like relating to them. And I've even had parents tell me that they like overheard me in the evaluation saying something to their child, like, this is really hard for me too. And I love to help and I'm a helper. So tell me what you need and I'll help you. And that strategy of just being like, it's okay. You can do this and it's okay. You will get this. And look at how far you've come. You were freaked out about using that glider 2 weeks ago. Now look at you. Like those strategies of bringing it back to them and saying, you couldn't even sit on the swing before. What happened? How did you get to be so strong? Like that kind of subtle stuff is huge. So those strategies of silliness and awareness through like, what, you're doing this now? That's huge.
Yeah. One thing that I always find myself doing, especially when there's something like they don't want to do, maybe they're fearful of it or just hesitant for some reason, I'll always be like, hey, let me tell you guys a secret, but don't tell anybody. I have a secret and I only want you to know. I'm really scared to do and then like throw something out that like I either used to be scared of doing and now I'll do it, or I'm still scared. And I think it's almost like they look at you like, wait a second, you're scared of something? So it's okay for me to be scared, but let's work through it together. Like, hey, I'll help you get through this, but I'm really scared to go down the slide. So maybe you could help me go down the slide if that's something that they're more confident in doing. And so that relatability is so key. And I think also that silliness too, because you kind of have to like laugh and joke it yourself to get them to be like, oh, she's not like super serious and it's not just gonna like lay down the hammer and make me do everything. Like, it's light, it's playful. We're here to help each other and we're gonna support each other through this. It's not just you're the authority figure, I have to do what you say type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And like I was mentioning, I mean, I work with kids that are, you know, pretty high functioning. And so cognitively, most of them are really able to understand what you're saying and be able to even say to you, like, I mean, I'll say, you know what, I am such a helper. That's what I do. And I want to help you with things that you don't feel are very easy for you. What is it that seems tricky for you? And if you know, let me know and we can work on that together. So sometimes just even having that conversation, depending on how aware they are and willing to share that with you. And most of them will say, you know, oh, I'm not so good at this and I'd like to be better at that. And knowing, like, taking that pressure off and realizing that this is fun, and then they just can't wait to come back. So I feel like those are some good like strategies. And like you're saying, oh yeah, let me tell you a secret, or, oh, you're so brave. Like, look at you. And let me tell you this, little secret of how some other kids do this and how you can do it this way or that way. But I think that those are some really helpful strategies on how to get kids feeling a little bit more comfy and more open to trying something and realizing that they can do it and it's not as bad as they think. And I feel like my most favorite piece of equipment for kids is the Lycra swing.
Okay.
You know, just Lycra in general, and how you can do so much with it, and how it's today a little girl got in it for the first time and said she felt like she was floating to the bottom of the ocean. And it was so cute the way she like explained that. And, you know, I feel like it's such a great sort of tool because it's working on so many different things at once, and kids end up like loving that forever, like always wanting it and being so fear, the ones that are so like absolutely fearful in the beginning, they're just obsessed with it later. Yes. I mean, you're working on so many different things with that. So many.
I'm glad you threw in the fearful part, because I feel like it is one of the swings that a lot of kids, or at least in my experience, they start out very afraid of it or just unsure. And you kind of get inside, and if you lay down, like, you can't see anything. It feels different. The movement, because you can go in so many different ways, like, it's very kind of unnerving if you're not used to it. Mm-hmm. But I totally agree that once they experience it and realize it's fun, it's like the most addicting swing ever.
Yeah. And like, I use the Lycra in so many different ways too. Like, I'll hang it in four different points, or I'll hang it like as a hammock. I even made a Lycra tunnel. I mean, they have different things out there, you know, like those Lycra body socks. Yep. But I even put like the Lycra tunnel that I made, I can put it along my slide, if that makes sense, like as if it's a sock on the slide, and then the kids go down the slide.
Oh, cool.
Through the Lycra tunnel. Yeah. And they love it. And it's just, it's such a different thing. And I mean, we just do so many different things with it. And I feel like that resistance and the probe and the strength and that fear factor, and, you know, like, they feel so confident after they've like mastered that. you know, spinning them up into a little cocoon and then letting them unwind and changing into a butterfly, you know, like I just think it's really dynamic. I love it. And then I have them sit on it and bounce, you know, like they do in Cirque du Soleil, flip over on it. Like it's really cool. The things that you can do with it more than just like a swing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just the basic glider swing or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. And you can have them, like, I remember when I was working in the clinics, like we kind of have it sag a little bit. So then mm-hmm. they'd have to like climb up to the top and it's like, you're climbing up to the mountain. And then it's almost like a little slide. They slide right back down and
yes.
Oh yeah. Like trying to like yeah. hold onto it, like start from the bottom and grab on and then like climb into the middle. Oh, it's yeah. like, it's so adaptable and so yeah, that was definitely a fun one.
Yeah. I mean, I love all swings in general. Like that's swings are my favorite, but that would probably be like the one that I mean, and it's so much work for me though. Like when I'm like yes. moving them around in there and making sure they're not too close to the edge and you know, like it's a lot of work for me, but I love that one. And yeah, I have a few different ones and I call one of them a blueberry because it's like a turquoise and mainly because a little boy that I very first worked with out of my garage, because that's how I started my business, out of my one car garage, he called it a blueberry and I thought that was so cute. And so I still call it a blueberry.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I call another one like a cloud swing because it's way up high. Uh-huh. And then another one that's like a darker blue that I call the sky. And then the yellow tunnel is like the banana tunnel. Like I always need to come up with names to make it more exciting. I mean, you know how that goes.
Oh,
like,
yes.
It's like more exciting.
I know that all too well.
Yeah. You've got to.
Right. So yeah. Do you have one memorable, like the most memorable moment for you as an occupational therapist? Is there like one that just stands out to you?
Oh my gosh. Wow. A memorable moment with a client? Like,
or just in general, anything. Anything like within the OT realm that has just completely stood out to you?
Oh, why is like a bad moment coming to my mind? No, I think this one moment, and I don't know why, this little boy was very autistic and he was just diagnosed and he was only almost 3 and his parents were really having a tough time with it. And this is just sort of less about OT, but more about just human interaction and dynamics of, you know, just the challenges that parents have to go through in the whole, all the stages that they go through of grief and denial and acceptance and shame and guilt, all of those different things. When you're the first kind of contact that they have in the world of special needs, especially for kids with autism, it's not easy. Being their therapist, they don't like you. They don't want to be there. Mm-hmm. And I remember this one mom, she was just so angry with this little boy. She wasn't angry with her son. She was just angry about what was going on, what she thought was going on in the clinic with another client that she overheard she was sick. And she was so protective, which, you know, moms are protective of their kids, but she thought that another client in the clinic that was being treated at the same time as her son was sick, but he was diagnosed with botulism at an early age. He had botulism at 3 years of age, and that affects, you know, every muscle in your body, including your throat, your vocal cords. So he sounded sick. And I hope I'm making sense with this story because yeah. It's kind of getting like late for me, but
no, that's okay.
In my world with having a 2-year-old, but he wasn't sick at all. So basically the moment that stands out is this mom thought that her son was in harm's way because another little boy in the clinic wasn't sick, but she thought that he was, and then would potentially get her son sick. And she flipped out. She never came back again. She didn't want her son in, like, but it's like, you can't save everyone. You can't make everyone happy. And I was still in that zone of like, wait, why is she so upset? There's nothing wrong with this. Like, I can't
breach the confidentiality of my client that, you know, sounds like he's sick, but he's not. Mm-hmm. But I also can't soothe this woman and help her feel okay about what she's going through. And it was a hard place for me to be because I was running my business and I was just wanting to make everyone happy. And, you know, you don't also want like people to be unhappy and then maybe talk to other people and share their experiences. And then something happens with your reputation, you know, because people talk and this was a totally benign situation, but things get misinterpreted.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of layers basically, but that piece was the first time that I ever had to, and then the husband got involved and talked to me and just thought that I was like so unprofessional. And I was just like, whoa, this is really not working. And it was a huge learning experience for me on how to handle people grieving, but also trying to realize, help them understand that I'm trying to help. And yeah, it's a fine line and you can't always help these people. They need to go along their own journey and figure it out for themselves. And I think about this little boy all the time and wonder whatever happened to him because there was a lot going on, you know, and I wanted to help him, but his mom was not in that place and just was looking for excuses to like get out of there, you know, and find fault in what was going on. And that was the problem that just seemed to kind of happen. And she just flipped out. So, yeah.
That comment right there is so real. And I really respect you. Even like, I made the comment of like, what's your most memorable moment? And you're like, well, why is this something bad coming to mind? But like, that stands out so much to me. And I'm sure there are people that are going to be listening to this that they're going to resonate with that. Mm-hmm. I think there were so many little nuggets that you just said in that, like in those couple of sentences there, but the fact that we can't change, we can't fix everybody.
Right.
I mean, it's the truth. It's a harsh truth and I wish it wasn't the truth, but there are going to be people that, as one of my old mentors used to say, that fire us. They don't like our methodology. They don't like something about us. They don't like something that happened in the session that might have been out of our control. And for whatever reason, it doesn't work for them. Or mm-hmm. you might just not mesh with a client, with a parent or something like that. And
yeah,
like I'm going through something very similar where the parent isn't really agreeing with my methodology right now. And it's like, hey, if you want to go find another occupational therapist, that's perfectly fine. Maybe we just do not work. And mm-hmm. it's hard because we want to help everybody and we want to be there and support everybody. But sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Right.
But then also the fact that you were saying like it wasn't just that one thing. There were so many other layers because all of a sudden it started to challenge your professionalism and mm-hmm. your judgment. And it almost like starts to affect your psyche and your social emotional. And yeah. like, it kind of like gets into your soul a little bit. And yeah, like I love that you brought that up because I think it's so... I think it will be good for people to hear because I'm sure we're all going through it. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to know that it's not just me. It's not just you. Like we're all going through it.
Yeah. And honestly, like you were saying too, you might just not mesh with that particular family or whatever. And that's okay. I think that for me, it took me a while to say that's okay that you don't fit with me. Cause I think I was so, you know, but I can help you. You need to like realize that I am the one that can really help you understand this. And they just weren't ready for it. Or yeah, we just didn't mesh. And that is okay. They will find their way on their own time. And I don't want to say that I'm a control freak because I'm not, but you sort of start to feel like, well, why do I want to just really make them understand? I need to, you know, it's because you just want to help. Mm-hmm. But they'll find their groove somewhere else. And you have to be at peace with that. And the other thing is, after so much experience too, you realize this isn't a good fit for me either. If you're going to be, you know, if that client is going to be resisting and not feeling safe or comfortable or confident, it's not going to be productive in the end for the child. So, you know, I mean, I've had times when I've told parents, I'm not going to waste your money. Your child does not need to continue with OT. This is kind of a different tangent, but
that's okay. It's like, we'll roll with it.
Yeah. It's like, there's that other, you know, sort of that other end of the spectrum where you have a parent that is so busy in their lives and they want to help their child, but they don't have time to help their child. So they feel like the only way they're helping their child is sending them to, you know, occupational therapy. And I'm saying, I'm very ethical and I'm very professional in what I can do and what I feel like doesn't need the expertise of a therapist. But parents will be like, I don't care. I still want to go to you. And I also have to say, all right, you can still come, but you need to realize that like, these are things that don't take a therapist to work on. So there's that piece too, where you just need to be honest. And if you don't feel like therapy needs to continue, just to let them know, and then they can make their own decision. So it can go that way too, where they're going to make their decision to stay with you longer than they need to,
yeah,
you know? And so I feel like the takeaway from that is just being really honest about what you think. And it's okay sometimes too, to say, hey, let's take a break from therapy. And maybe we can use that as a learning tool to see how they're doing without needing this support. And then maybe they still do need the support and that's okay. Come back. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's a dance that happens also in private practice. And that relationship with the parent is so important, that trust. And because if they trust you, then they will feel just more sure about the process. And that relationship is strong with the clients that I have in my practice. And I value that. And I feel like over time and experience, I've been able to say too, maybe I'm not going to be a good fit with this client, even though they want to still come to me. Mm-hmm. I get to decide too. I don't know if this is going to be very effective, you know, for whatever reason. There's a million reasons, but I get to choose that too. And that's good. But that took a while for me to get to that place too.
Yeah. Honesty, trusting, like realness, confidence. I mean, these are all the words that you've been saying. And I think like taking that break, for me, it's almost like taking a step back to reevaluate what's going on and what can be done, what can't be done. If there's like, if you can't get something accomplished because it's not within our scope of practice or something like that. Like I, yeah. Oh, those are all such good words right there.
Oh, good. Good. Well, because I think too, you have to be truthful with yourself, because I remember thinking that I could like do everything. I used to be like, oh yeah, I can handle that. I can like help you with this. And I think over the years, I was just like, there's no reason to take that on. You know, I think we take on a lot, and there's no reason to feel like you can solve every issue in this child's life, because you can't. There are so many factors that like you have no control of what's going to happen once they walk out of your, you know, once your session is over. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing too, letting go of that and realizing that if the progress isn't happening as quick as you think it should be in your sessions, that it's not on you. You know, they have a whole other life outside of your treatment sessions that should be, you know, taken into account of what's going on with their progress.
This is some good stuff. I want to just keep talking. Like, this is so good. But I know that we got to start thinking about wrapping it up, because we're on about an hour here and I have a couple more questions to get through.
Okay.
So
okay.
I want to pivot for a second, because I know that you have created a product. Mm-hmm. And I would love for you to share a little bit more about what you created, mm-hmm. and how you use it in your practice, and kind of what that whole process has been like.
Oh my gosh. What's really funny is this was created out of the exact school that I met you at.
No way. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, no, I don't know if you were there when I did this, but it basically came out of the work that I did there, which was amazing. I had such an opportunity to bring in anything that I wanted. I had such flexibility that I was able to kind of do everything. I could do yoga. I could do therapeutic listening. And I loved that about the school. And one of the things that I picked up on is even though I pushed services in and I pulled kids out into the clinic, teachers with all of their experience too still needed to do things easy when I wasn't there. And I would give them a million ideas and it would just be like way too overwhelming, even though I was like, what are you talking about? This is so basic. Like we've talked about this a million times. You know, you do it this way or do it that way. So basically I was like, it can be so easy to bring into the classroom such that will help with giving kids some good strength and some good sensory feedback. And I felt like the TheraBands were such underutilized pieces of equipment that were so good for kids. And I thought, what if I just brought in some TheraBands to the classroom, took some pictures of myself doing some different basic exercises, because I found that teachers needed the visuals. And I couldn't find any visuals of kids doing different exercises with the TheraBands online. So I was like, I want to do TheraBand activities. I can't find the visuals. I'm going to take pictures of myself. And the kids are going to look through the pictures and do the exercises. And we're going to call it Super Kids. But you always have to train the teachers in how to use different programs, right? They need to see you doing it and it needs to be easy. So I brought in like a band for each kid, kept it in a little Tupperware, called it Super Kids, had the maybe five exercises on a ring that they could flip through, pictures of me doing these exercises, and they would each get a turn to pass out the bands. You know, each get a turn to pick the exercise, and then we would all do it. We would do 10 different super pulls, and then we would super sit. Everything was super. And they loved it. And the teachers, the whole concept behind it was that the teachers could do this easily. It doesn't take up a lot of space in their room. And I remember this one OT wanted to come from a different school district and see what we did as a program at Sunrise, because a lot of people loved what we did in that school and would come and want to see what kind of program that we had and would take that and sort of emulate that in their own districts. And this one OT from, I think El Segundo, California, she was so sweet. I would see her sometimes at different like round table discussion events within the district. And she came and she's like, you need to patent this. And I'm like, what? And I just didn't think anything of it. And years later, after I opened up my business out of my garage, my OT clinic business, and then expanded and then became less of a direct treating OT, I was able to put energy into this product. So one of the big things that I forgot to mention when I was doing the different super kid exercises with the kids at the preschool, a lot of them had one-on-one aides. And you know how like these aides like to do everything for their students, even though they think they're not, and even though they say they're not. They would literally do hand over hand with these kids and with the bands when they would do the exercises. And I'm like, don't do it. Stand back. Let them do it on their own. Well, what I realized is they needed a visual. Once they had the visual of where to put their hands on the band, it made it so much easier for them. They were so much more independent and they could benefit from it. So I created a band called Handy Band because it's a regular, you know, it's like 4 foot, but it's 6 pounds of resistance, but there's handprints on the band. So the visual is there. Kids know where to put their hands. And then along with that are exercises that are illustrated in very like child-friendly, monster-like little illustrations for the kids to engage in like 15 different exercises with the band.
And since I created that, it's evolved into other things like a spinner game with the characters and like a little checklist with a dry erase marker. It was all supposed to be easy, minimal, simple, no brainer, because we as OTs have to grade the activities and we have to figure out. But with this, it's like, it's so easy and it's meant for OTs to use, parents, teachers. So, I mean, I could go on and on about it.
I think the one thing that I wanted to throw in that, yes, it's easy. There's visuals. It's amazing. The pictures, the graphics, everything's great. And it's fun. And the kids, because I've been using it with, well, when I was working with some of the older kids. Now my kids are a little too young. Most of them probably couldn't use it. But when I used to see some older kids, they loved it. I mean, loved it. Aww. They loved the pictures and they loved the graphics. And there would be a lot of times that like I'd either purposely or accidentally like start doing it wrong. And they'd literally look at the pictures on the page and then be like, wait a second, you know, the flamingo is doing it this way. You have to do it like that. And I was like, oh,
I love it.
Okay. And yeah, I got such a good response. And so that's why I really wanted you to talk about the product, because it's absolutely amazing. It's very simple. It's very straightforward and it's easy for therapists to do, but then also caregivers, teachers, aides, anybody else. And one of my favorite things actually was the little like weekly checklist. And so you can go in and there's like a little calendar and it's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the days of the week. And then you can check off if you did it or not. And my kiddos, they just absolutely loved taking the little marker and putting a check mark, or if you're practicing letters, they'd write an A or whatever letter they were doing, and they wanted to fill it in. And if they missed any, they wanted to make sure that they would go back and they would do every single exercise. So it was almost like an accountability type thing to make sure that they are doing them too.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I know. And that was the whole idea behind it, is helping them feel successful about doing something and being responsible and accountable for doing it. And when I do it in groups, they want to be the first one to check it off because it's the dry erase checklist and you can use it and reuse it. And so it's like, it really helps them feel like, yeah, I did this. And they love to become more familiar with the characters and want to choose those specific or particular character exercises and then do them. And so one of the things that I realized after creating this product, because first it was for children that needed that extra help with, you know, they're falling out of the chair. They have poor postural control. You know, they have poor upper body strength and shoulder girdle strength and body awareness. And I realized after creating this, which happened about 5 years ago now, I think, and I've not been able to put as much energy into it after having my daughter and things like that. So I'm just now kind of gearing back up with it and creating other things too, which I'm very excited about. But I wanted this to also be something just neurotypical kids could use, because what's happening is these kids are so inactive and they're on their screens and, you know, watching TV, watching videos, watching YouTube. I can't even believe the amount of kids that are watching videos of games that I play with them in my sessions. They'll be like, I saw this on YouTube. I'm like, what are you doing watching other kids playing games?
Right.
You should
be
playing these games yourself.
Exactly.
Like, I don't understand this. And it's like getting back to old school, like play. And these kids don't know what that is. And it's looking through a book, looking through pictures and imitating and also gaining strength from it and getting exercise and getting your heart rate up, getting your blood pumping. And typically developing kids are not getting that either. So, you know, I'm also trying to promote it with that population and families working out and exercising together and having fun together. But it's interesting the way it's evolved that way, because I started doing it first just with kids that needed some help. And now it's like, but this is for all kids.
Oh, completely. And so needed. So needed. And it's great that you mentioned having them doing it with the parents, because the parents, they can use that band, or they can get like a stronger band, and everybody's working out together. Mm-hmm. And I love that. It's not just, hey, little Johnny, here's your exercise that only you do. It's like, no, mom and dad are going to do it. Sister and brother are going to do it. Look, your friends right. are doing it. It's like, we can all do it. And I think it gives that kid that confidence of like, it's not just me. Like, we mm-hmm. can all do it.
Right. And everybody would benefit from just getting a little bit, like it's such a whole family kind of thing where they can create a routine around it and do something together. Because I can't even tell you, with the families that I work with, like barely even sit down at the table to have dinner together anymore.
Yep.
Or, you know, there's just, it's almost like a lot of the families, the parents are like more weekend parents, and they have their nannies that are taking care of their kids throughout the week. And so it's also that commitment too of the family. And if that mom, you know, is also interested in creating that for their family.
One thing that I also want to point out too is, at least when I was working in the clinics, and you know what, I still get it now, but especially when I was in the clinic and I was recommending all of these like physical activities for the kids to do, so often the mom or the dad or the caregiver would look at me and be like, I don't have the space for that. Mm-hmm. I can't do that exercise because I don't have the physical space in order to do it. And with your product, with the Handy Band, you don't need a lot of space. Of course, you can right. utilize space if you have it. But if you don't have it, all you really need is your own body and the band and a couple of inches on every, like, within that realm. And that's about mm-hmm. it. And so it's very easy to take it anywhere if they're traveling, mm-hmm. if they mm-hmm. have a small amount of space. And the actual product doesn't take up much space either, which is another win.
Yeah, no, and there was like a method behind that for sure. I mean, it started off in like a spiral ring tripod book, so you could prop the book up and have it, you know, more of a vertical surface to look at.
That's what I have.
yeah. And now I have like the ring cards, and we have an ebook, you know, so that might be like helpful for other people. But it was all about convenience and not taking up a lot of space. And the interesting thing is, I have it's sales are really high on the East Coast, and I've done a lot of shows on the East Coast, and all of the therapists talk about that exact same thing that you're bringing up about it doesn't take up a lot of space, because a lot of traveling therapists, they're not going to want to bring a therapy ball or a dizzy disc or a scooter board. Like, they just want their bag. Like, they're breaking their backs when they're traveling, you know, on the subway or whatever. And so they loved this too, because they could just slip it in their bag and take it with them. And so it's interesting, because that space piece was also part of it in the design, and making it simple and easy. And I just feel like in general, the TheraBand, I mean, I don't know. I love that thing. I mean, and I don't use it every
Me
day.
<too. laughs>
Yeah. And I don't use it every day. I don't use it for every child, but it, you know, it really is a tool as therapists, just like TheraPutty, I think, is amazing. You know, but we don't always use it, especially I don't recommend it for like family sometimes, because I'm like, you guys, if you're not keeping an eye out, if you leave this sitting on your wooden table, you're done. You know, like, it will just ooze right out and ruin everything. Like,
melt onto the carpet.
Right. In their clothes. Yeah. I'm always like, I love this, but please don't buy it unless you know you can use it and supervise it and keep it, you know, in a safe place. But it's like, I just feel like those things that are also effective for adults in rehab are just as effective for children. But the hook is like getting them engaged. And that's why the illustrations were my next piece of it. You know, obviously I wasn't going to do pictures of myself any longer. It was like, get them engaged, all of the characters are, you know, based off of the work that I've done with kids and what interest they have, you know, superheroes and train conductors and cars and frog jumps and octopus sea creatures and sharks and things like that. Those are all of the things that we do in our treatment sessions to help with imagination, and ideation and motor planning. And all the characters have special names, and they're all names of kids that I've worked with or some family, you know, members or my dog, you know, like one of the characters is Henry, and that's my little rescue dog.
Aww. So, yeah.
And I'm like the flamingo Franny, even yep. though nobody calls me Franny. But so there's all like, you know, things behind it. But the biggest piece is it's what draws children in. It's the illustrations. It's the 2D illustrations that you find in a book and then the 3D that they're looking at on a screen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, get back to that. I mean, you just learn so much from that, and the ideas just flow. And I even see it in my daughter. Like, I'm not like a crazy, like, we're not watching TV ever, but the amount of time she spends looking at books is huge. And she has learned so much from it. I'm not kidding. Like, when they say sing to your child and look at books, she has learned so much where I'm like, where did she learn these things? And you need to get back to that and turning the pages and finding your place. It's so different than swiping.
Yes.
So different.
Yes. I feel like that is a whole nother conversation
in itself.
And that is something that I am so passionate about. Mm-hmm. And I would love to have you come back on and we can yes. dive deep into that conversation, because it is one that I am passionate about. And from the sounds of it, I think you are too.
Yes. Yes, I am. I very much am. I mean, I have one app on my phone for the kids, and it's that Writing Wizard. And I know that there's so much out there that so many therapists are just using in their treatment sessions too.
Mm-hmm.
Only apps.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, what? This is OT is old school. I'm sorry. Right. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm old school, but OT is supposed to be a very old school. That's what we do. And right. yeah. So yeah, we could totally go forever.
Yeah.
So
have you,
just
out of curiosity, have you read, I think it's called Retro Baby?
No.
Oh, you should read it.
Okay.
It's written by an OT, and I heard her on a podcast, and I was like, I want to check out this book. And it's all about like going back to the basics and just the very simple, non-tech, non-anything like super crazy, just going back to the foundations of play. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's one called Retro Baby and one called Retro Toddler, I believe. I think I read the toddler one.
Oh no, I'll remember that. I mean, it's funny because I feel like a lot of the old school stuff is also the way I grew up, because my mom just sort of, you know, let's get a cardboard box from the down the street appliance store and turn it into a house, you know, like it's something. And now I see that there's a company that makes cardboard boxes and you can make them into houses and paint them. I'm like, whoa, this is crazy.
You're like, so, but you can also just get a box and turn it into a house.
Yes, exactly. But that is the way
money.
That things. Yeah. And it's like, wait, what else did I do where I can turn that into something else too? Because it's we've forgotten all of that. Mm-hmm. And I have so many parents tell me, you should write a book. I'm like, no, it's not necessary. Like this is just tap into your childhood a little bit more.
Yeah.
And remember what you've done and try to, you know, but anyway, I know we could talk about it forever.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Let's wrap this up. I would love to keep talking, but I know you got to go. So I have one more question.
Okay.
Actually, never mind. I have two. I lied. But I have one more question and then an ask of you.
Okay.
So my last question, and that this is something I ask all of my guests, is how would you describe occupational therapy in one word?
Care.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Okay, good.
I like
Has
that
anybody
one.
Said that?
No, I don't think so. I need.
What have you gotten?
Oh, I've gotten.
You remember?
Let's see. I've gotten life, hope, living, joy. Oh gosh, I need to start writing them down so I can remember what everybody said. But yeah, it's. I love asking it because everybody is just different. And usually I've only had a couple repeats. So everybody's coming up with something just slightly different. And it's awesome because I think so many people are like, wait a second, there's so much I have to say. I can't put it in one word. They almost like get mad at me for the question.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. No, I think it just comes easy to me because like the word care means so many things. You know, it's like got so like it's you take it in so many different directions, but yeah. And I could go on and on, but I won't. But yeah, that's my word.
Perfect. Perfect. One word. And I also wanted to ask you if people want to get in contact with you or if they mm-hmm. wanted to learn more about the Handy Band or your practice, where could they find you?
Great question. So with Handy Band, my website is www.handyband.com, but Handy is spelled HANDEE and then band.com. So it's kind of got a little twist spelled that way. And then my occupational therapy practice is actually in Los Angeles. So it's called Therapy Works LA. And that's therapyworksla.com. That is the website that pretty much captures who I am as a therapist and gives all the information about where I'm located as far as my clinic goes.
Perfect. Well, I will make sure that I link to all of this in the show notes. So if anybody wants great. To check out what the Handy Band is, or maybe we can even put in some pictures of what your clinic looks like, some yes. of those Lycra swings and everything, yes. that would be fantastic. We can include okay, cool. all of that. Francesca, this has been amazing. So much fun.
Thank you.
Great to just connect and chat and learn some stuff that I didn't know about you. So
yay.
This has been just absolutely fantastic. And thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you. I have loved every second of it. And I'm just so proud of you. I'm in awe of you as a therapist too, and everything that you've done. So thank you. You are also an inspiration. Aww. So love it. Yeah.
Thank yeah. you. I'm like, yeah, I've been looking forward to this for a while because honestly, like, and I think I mentioned this at OTAC, like you are the reason that I am where I am today, even though you probably feel like you like had nothing to do with it, but like you planted the seed of occupational therapy in my brain. And from then I like took it and ran with it. And
yeah,
so
you did.
Like I owe so much to you.
Oh my God. No, you don't. Are you kidding me? Oh my gosh. No, it was just timing and it was meant for you. You know, it was meant to be. So it all came together. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Well, this has been just, this has been so great. And I will definitely, I want to get you back on and talk yeah. about some of these other topics. Oh, I can't thank you enough for doing the episode and for introducing me to this wonderful profession.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're a part of it and doing so many amazing things. Yay. Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
You too. Okay, thank you.
I'll talk to you later.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. 1, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 2, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. 3, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
I'm just really excited. And my mom, I told her on my drive home, she was like, oh my God, that's so cool that she does this. And I'm like, I know. Yeah. She thought it was very like innovative and like, you're just really getting it. And I was like, I know. It's really
I'm
neat.
I'm trying.
Wait. Oh my God. There I go. There I go.
You were the first one. Usually it's me. Don't worry.
Shoot. Okay.
We wanted to make it easy.
What was that?
Hold on. Do you hear that or is that just me?
I don't hear it.
There we go. My YouTube just decided to start playing and it was almost like Transformers music. And I was like, wait, what is going on? Somebody's hijacked my headset. Material. What's the word I'm looking for? Not material.
Modality or something?
Like- I'm thinking like swings or scooter board. What's the word? Not material.
Like not equipment. Modality, but like equipment. Exactly.
What's okay. The word? Like, what is that word?
But the
hold on 1 second.
Yes.
Maybe adjust your headset or something. I'm getting some feedback a little bit.
Oh, you know what happened? My husband just walked into the kitchen. Maybe that's what that was.
Maybe.
Is it gone?
Yeah, now it's better. I was just getting like some like clicking and whatnot. Maybe you had like leaned some way and it was like rubbing or something.
My necklaces, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
No, that sounds better. Okay. I'm gonna pause for 1 second. That clicking is back.
Oh gosh, it's my necklace. Okay.
That's what it is. I was like, it sounds like it's right by your headset. And I was like, I can't put my finger on what it is. Okay, it's your necklace.
So sorry.
No,
I'm so
that's
sorry.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, that's what it was. I have like three necklaces on. Yeah, okay. So